Right around the corner on a brand new Daddy on Board, let's talk the demise of guys, the perils of distracted parenting, and the pleasure of fast food logos. All that and more are right around the corner on Dob 106. Welcome, nutrition-conscious parents, to Daddy on Board 106, a podcast loaded with omega-3 but free of trans fats. You'll be delighted to know I am your host, Lightning Mike Quackenbush. I'm a podcaster, parent, and professional wrestler, and I'm pleased to be bringing you the program this week. It is only made possible thanks to our exclusive sponsor, Cobra Electronics. Our sponsor of this week's program, as they are always. They take great care of us, and they'll take great care of you, too. If there is a father in your life, maybe you know one, or maybe you even have a father who loves gizmos, you need to head over to Cobra.com right now as you're assembling your Christmas or otherwise holiday shopping list, and check out the incredible array of gizmos our friends at Cobra Electronics make for guys that live on the go. A quick note, their gadgets can also be used by females. Well, I'd like to tell you about a bunch of stuff, and I'm going to start with this story. Is your high-tech smart gizmo thingamabob diminishing your ability to properly supervise your little one? Well, emergency room doctors think so. They see the growing use of handheld electronic devices as an explanation for the surprising reversal of a long-term slide in injury rates for young children. There have been a few extreme cases that have resulted from this, of death as a result of this recent trend. This is very serious stuff that every parent needs to know. And so here it is. I even loaded it up with some statistics. That's how serious it is. All right? Here's a statistic. The number of Americans aged 13 or older who own a smartphone, I'm talking about a BlackBerry, iPhone, Super Robot 6GS, has grown from almost 9 million users in the year 2007 when Apple first introduced the iPhone, to 114 million by July of this year. The increase in child injury numbers could just be a statistical anomaly. Child injury experts say there could be other factors beside the mobile devices that contribute to this increase in injury rate for young children, including riskier behavior among children or an increasing tendency for parents to take their children to the emergency room. However, the Consumer Product Safety Commission, which is a governmental body that you'll recall from a long-running subplot on the X-Files, which tracks injuries by product type, show children are getting hurt more during activities and at ages that would seem to warrant close supervision. So most of these statistics are relevant to children ages 5 and younger. Here we go. Injuries involving playground equipment jumped 17% in the last 5 years. Injuries involving nursery equipment, like a changing table, for example, up 31% in the last 5 years. Injuries involving swimming pools climbed 36%. Previous to the introduction of smartphones in 2007, all of these had been trending downward for years, some of them trending downward for decades before 2007. In a 2010 survey by the Pew Research Center, whose data must stink, 14% of adults and 22% of adults who send text messages report being so distracted by their devices that they've actually bumped into an object or another person while doing it. Nevertheless, researchers have found that people who complete a task on a device don't report that they think they're impaired. They don't think their attention is diverted. They don't feel like they are distracted the same way they might be if they were watching a television show or reading a newspaper article, because they consider this to be multitasking. This may explain why many adults continue to use their devices when supervising their children, because they don't see it as an impairment to their ability to supervise. Psychologist Kathy Hirsch-Pasek of Temple University, which I think is where all the Jewish people go on weekends, recently had students observe parents and their children in public places. And in almost every case, she says, the parent interrupted an activity with the child so they could use their mobile device. Quote, in one case, a parent let go of her kid's hand in the middle of a big street in Philadelphia in order to check a text message. End quote. Now, studies have found that children are more likely to take risks when they aren't being watched carefully. Quote, it may be that children can perceive the inattention and take more risk, says Dr. Schwebel, the psychologist at the University of Alabama. I said the because I think he's the only one there. When a parent is on a device, Dr. Schwebel says, your kid may know that you are there but not paying attention. We just assume that as long as we're in the same room with a child, that they're safe. But kids will always find a way to hurt themselves, and wow, I think there is some truth to that. And certainly having a rambunctious three-year-old of my own, I see the truth in that statement. And it is for – even before I had seen this and some of the studies related to it and everything else, it is one of the reasons that I have decided that when I have the opportunity to really spend quality time with my son, that I don't want my phone to be nearby. Because it is a distraction. That is exactly what that device represents to me. It is a distraction. And it also speaks a little bit to my own personality in that I am definitely one of those people that if the phone is ringing or I see a message come in, my attention does get diverted. I'm unable to just tune that sort of thing out. And so it is simply better to remove that from the situation because, as I noted, my three-year-old is really quite rambunctious. And believe me, when I read these injury rate increases, I think this could very easily be my son in a moment of inattention from me. And while certainly I think that maybe this is a positive step in the right direction, I don't think I'm about to win any Parenting of the Year awards, unless, of course, the award committee is listening to this podcast right now. But I do think it's something that every parent needs to consider, and I've tried to give you a lot of statistical information there. Of course, facts sometimes are organized in certain ways by certain people. I'm not saying anything about the Pew Research Center. I'm not saying anything about the Consumer Product Safety Commission. But take that data as it's presented and see how perhaps that impacts some of your own parenting decisions going forward, will you? On a semi-related note, I want to point out, without mentioning any identities, I don't know the identity to reveal it if I wanted to, about a texting parent in front of me in line at Target, and I observed as their daughter, roughly about the same age as my son Elliot, I'm not exactly sure, with great care took advantage of the distraction to shoplift some Rolos. And I really didn't want to say anything because that kid really wanted the Rolos. And the kid worked hard to get them, so well done there. The Los Angeles Times ran a piece just about a week ago by David Lazarus, which I thought was very interesting, about fast food restaurant logos. This kind of thing always fascinates me, the whole theory behind corporate rhetoric and marketing and everything like that. I want to share this information with you. Certainly, I know this to be true about our tendency sometimes to make bad choices as it relates to eating healthy. But this is really deep-rooted in some psychology. As you know, of course, fast food chains do their very best to make an impression on young consumers. I'm sure that's the thought process behind the Happy Meal, as opposed to positive nutrition. Well, researchers at the University of Missouri in Kansas City and the University of Kansas Medical Center did some MRI scans of kids' brains as they showed them assorted corporate logos. They showed them 60 related to food brands and then 60 related to non-food brands in a random order. Well, it turns out that when a logo for a fast food restaurant would appear, the pleasure center of a kid's brain lights up, which demonstrates that a connection is being made to something that they consider to be either a treat or a reward. However, this effect does not occur when logos for non-food brands are being flashed. Says Dr. Amanda Bruce, who led the study, quote, "Research has shown children are more likely to choose those foods with familiar logos. That's concerning because the majority of foods marketed to children are unhealthy," end quote. You might be interested to know that this research was conducted on a group of children all between the ages of 10 and 14. The food logos triggered increased activity in the area of the brain known to be involved in reward processing and in driving and controlling appetite. So this means that the children's brains basically have been imprinted with food logos, and they make an unconscious connection to a positive thought, right? It stimulates the reward center of their brain. They seem to think that this is a clear indicator of why it is that junk food has such a hold over the country and why it plays such a significant role in our current obesity epidemic. In other words here, kids often crave unhealthy foods because the advertising that they've been exposed to wires them to choose it. And I just want to say that that's why I go to fast food restaurants. I have been wired to. I can't help it. I cannot help it. Sometimes I just want that Kentucky Fried Chicken. I know it's not good for me. And you see what this does? Now I'm blameless, right? It's the fault of the logo. I see Arnold Sanders' face. And I just want that chicken.
I want that original recipe in my mouth.
It's not my fault. Good piece by David Lazarus. If I didn't mention, that comes from the Los Angeles Times. It was carried over in their business section about a week ago.
Okay, I should have put this in earlier, because this is kind of related to what we were talking about before. About texting and driving, right? This was also carried by the New York Times and a number of other sources as well, about teenagers outing their parents.
Because while most adults know that when they're asked, do you text when you drive, or do you make phone calls when you drive, or what have you, generally speaking, you are intended to give the answer of no. However, a recent survey done by Liberty Mutual and by Students Against Destructive Decisions, which is SAD, that's their acronym, S-A-D-D, seeing teenagers out their parents for a certain level of hypocrisy as it relates to this, because 59% of teenagers reported seeing their parents texting while driving. The teenagers in this national survey reported that their parents engaged in a variety of unsafe and distracted driving behaviors. An unsurprising 91% of teenagers say their parents do it at least once in a while, in spite of overwhelming research, of course, that shows that a hands-free mobile phone conversation significantly slows driver response time. A depressing 78% of teenagers report that they text while driving themselves. Some interesting information from Dave Melton, the Director of Transportation Consulting Services at Liberty Mutual, says this, quote, "Kids begin to learn to drive long before we think they do. They go to the driving school of mom and dad for a long, long time. How can we expect them to do anything other than what we've taught them?" End quote. I think there's some real truth to that. But now I'm done making everybody feel bad about what they do with their mobile devices, so I'm not going to talk any more about that. Instead, I'm going to talk a little bit about our great and long-standing show sponsor, Cobra.com. While my profession as a podcaster lends itself to a somewhat sedentary lifestyle, my preoccupation as parent and professional wrestler means that I am always on the go. That's why I know so much about great show sponsors Cobra Electronics, whose innovations are out there to make the lives of people who live on the go like you and I do that much easier. Every time I'm road tripping, I take their Cobra Eye radar system in the car with me. It makes me a safer and more alert driver. It delivers to me up-to-date driving hazard information. I also love the Cobra Tag system, a two-way locator that makes sure, thanks to my smartphone, that I never misplace my Cobra Tag protected item, like a laptop bag or my iPad carrying case, my briefcase, my keys, whatever the case might be. You can watch concise demo videos about all these great inventions of theirs and more when you visit their website, Cobra.com. Also, be sure to check out the specials section of their website, which gets updated all the time with deep discounts on their best-selling items and sometimes even two-for-one offers, so you can give a gift when you pick something up for yourself. Go see them at Cobra.com. You may recall on a very recent Daddy on Board podcast, I invoked the name of Phil Zimbardo. He is, among other things, he's a writer, a researcher, a sociologist, probably best known for an infamous sociological experiment, I think from the mid-70s, that was conducted at Stanford, where groups of volunteers were either organized into a group where they were prisoners or a group where they were security guards, and he observed them over a course of a few days. The experiment was intended to last a week, but it actually flamed out after about 3 days after observing really disturbing behavior from all of the participants. And the research yielded some fascinating results. It was also heavily criticized. And Zimbardo kind of became infamous in the wake of this thing, which he organized. Anyway, his recently released book, The Demise of Guys, has been picking up momentum and spurning lots of discussion. He has a lot of alarming research about the way that boys are falling further and further behind girls in virtually every measurable way, in terms of the way that they're educated and the way that they function in society. Females are outdistancing their male counterparts by wider and wider margins, and that is exactly what Zimbardo addresses in The Demise of Guys, is the name of his work. He talks about why it is that some boys, and then ultimately men, are unmotivated or motivated by the wrong things. And he says that society, as society, we're not really asking the right questions when it comes to these young men and their motivations. He feels that they aren't motivated at all, and that they're motivated in the same way that guys used to be. They are no longer motivated that way, says Zimbardo.
He says that society wants guys to be, quote, upstanding, proactive citizens who take responsibility for themselves, who work with others to improve their communities and nation as a whole, end quote. And then reflecting on his own research, Zimbardo said that the irony is that society is not giving the support, the means, or the places for these young men to even be motivated or interested to aspire to those things that society expects of them. Zimbardo says media, education, and society at large are the problems. Society, he says, is, quote, the major contributor to this demise because it is inhibiting guys' intellectual, creative, and social abilities right from the start, end quote. The result is young men that lack purpose, they lack even basic social interaction skills, and they live off their parents. I think he raises a number of really alarming issues, especially when you look at the education statistic about how boys are falling further and further behind girls. One of the people to chime in on this is from a group of obviously very engaged dads that make up the National Fatherhood Initiative. And their author, Ryan Sanders, a blogger, said that he feels that the demise of guys has nothing to do with the factors that Zimbardo discusses. You know, he specifically in that names the media, the education system, and society at large. He says that he thinks this is entirely attributable to the absence of fathers, which I think is a unique take. And I don't know that he really has the research to back that up that Zimbardo does. But I'm interested to know what your take is on this particular topic, whether you've read The Demise of Guys or not. Why do you think it is that boys are falling further and further behind girls and that they are less able to assimilate themselves into regular society? And certainly a social freak like myself, I should be able to chime in on some of that. I'd like to hear some of your feedback about it, and perhaps next week on the program we'll talk about that. You can send me your feedback, your thoughts, your comments, and your jabs at The Daddy on Board on Twitter, or if that does not provide you with enough character space, just drop by either Google Plus or our Facebook fan page for The Daddy on Board podcast and leave me your feedback there. I'd like to know what you think, da bobbers. I want to throw this out there for a couple parents who have reached out to me over the last couple weeks as the holidays are drawing near, because they know that their little one shares an interest with my son, and an interest that he and I share together, and that is in the greater world of superheroes at large. It can be difficult to find age-appropriate toys, especially when you've got really harsh films like The Dark Knight Rises in theaters, out there, to find age-appropriate toys that involve superheroes at, you know, wherever it is that you may go and shop. Or maybe do shopping online, whatever the case might be. So I wanted to let some of these parents know who had reached out to me on this exact point. You are right. A number of you had mentioned to me toy lines for superheroes where they come a little too small. They're a danger to be put in the mouth, and that is a big concern, right? You see like those mini-mate type guys, and anything that's roughly that size that fits inside of a small child's mouth, even if they just, you know, they want something to suck on that's not their thumb or their pacifier or anything like this, that's not a good idea. It's just not a good idea. We don't want them licking the paint off the figures anyway. That makes for unattractive figures in addition to being apparel. I have found that the unfortunately recently discontinued line of Mattel figures Justice League Unlimited, if your kids like the DC icons like Superman, Batman, Wonder Woman, and the like, is a pretty good happy medium. Now, they are recommended for children ages 4 and up, but very few of these figures come with any small pieces, which is great. They don't have cloth capes. They have rubber capes, which are pretty firmly attached. The figures are, generally speaking, large enough that they're not going to end up in your kid's mouth. The ones that do come with small pieces, it's easy to take them away. For example, Green Arrow has a bow that he comes with, and if you don't want him to have the bow, then just take it away. It's really quite simple. And the figures are big and blocky, and they are pretty durable. They're going to stand up to a little bit of a beating, which is good if you're giving them to your little ones. The thing that's really cool about the Justice League Unlimited line is they pretty much made every character you can ever think of in this line. So if your kid likes the really obscure superheroes, like he's really fascinated by Jack Kirby's New Gods, don't worry, because they made almost all of them in the line. If your kid grew up watching the DVDs of the 70s Super Friends, like you and I used to watch on TV, don't worry, because they made Black Vulcan and Samurai and Apache Chief right from the Super Friends into the Justice League Unlimited line. with the exception of maybe finding an orange-shirted Aquaman, you can get pretty much any DC superhero and villain that you could ever want in the JLU line. The downside is, as I mentioned, they've been discontinued. You're only going to find scarce remnants of them. Target was the last major retailer to carry them. And you'll find just the last line, which had like Captain Atom, Red Tornado, the One Man Army Corps, and one of the other characters was in that assortment as well. So finding them out there on major retailers' shelves is quite difficult. But you'll see them turn up in large quantities. You can buy them loose on eBay. You can buy them in the package on eBay as well or on Amazon.com. And on average, unless you really get a steal, expect to pay between $8 and $9 for one of these figures. Luckily, all the really common ones, the ones that the kids want, like Superman, Batman, etc., they've made them in dozens of different paint variants. So they're so common, those are the ones you're most likely going to find for an inexpensive price. If you're looking to assemble some of those, as I know I am, I'm working very hard on it, putting together an attractive collection of the world's greatest super friends in time for the holidays. So there you go. Little plug. Send me some money, Mattel, or some free action figures for doing that for you, would you? Well, I like to round out Daddy on Board by reading your little victories, which you sent to me via Twitter, or on our Google Plus page, or even by writing it on the wall of my Facebook fan page. Thanks for dropping these off, including loyal Dabobber Sam Korn, who writes to me. He had two great parent-teacher conferences, and if they were great, then that's no little victory, Sam. Don't undersell it. Hashtag big victory for you. Also writing to me this week. Tim, is your last name Dixie? Or is it Dix? Dixie, maybe? I'm going to say Dixie. That's what I think it is. He shared this, which I think is an interesting idea. It's his three-peat rule. We have a rule in place that if anyone is told three times to do the same chore, automatic early bedtime by 1 hour. After about a week of this, our kids stopped fighting about the chore list. Yes, they must still get the chore done. Thanks for that clarification, Tim. In case that ever comes up in a court of law. And thank you for sending that in. That's not a bad idea at all, Tim, of the mysterious surname. Brent White wrote to me over on Facebook, threatening to put your five-year-old in a body cast has resolved all of the behavior problems, like not listening and talking in class. Well, Brent, I do like where that's headed. This is right up my parenting alley. Just this morning, actually, I was speaking to a fellow beleaguered parent. He's actually a defrocked doctor in the Midwest. And, well, Keith, there you go. That's the solution you've been waiting for. Mark Ricard wrote to me, "My kids do their own dishes when visiting anyone else's house on the planet." All right. I like that, Mark. Thank you for sending that in. I would like you to send me a video of that. Oh boy. Is this Jaina? I'm going to guess so. Like the Wonder Twin, right? Are you the one that turns into the animal Jaina? If your name isn't Jaina, that is to say, if your last name is McDuff Hagen, then I'm sorry. But I don't think it's Jaina. My 13 and 15-year-old sons are always looking for opportunities to open doors for others. The 13-year-old brings down and takes up an invalid neighbor's trash, and they both help cut our other neighbor's yard with my husband. That's great, especially that they're not just opening doors for blondes. Right? All right, brunettes. Michelle Watson Stewart wrote to me. Big milestone for my 21-year-old college senior this week. Got her own apartment with no cosigner with a credit score of 720. Woohoo. Credit score of 720. Ripe for identity theft. Jody White Hartman wrote to me. It was a wonderful avatar of the mother from the Munsters, whose name escapes me at the moment. Whenever I read this, I always want to respond, "Well, I didn't kill any of them this week, but that seems so harsh." No, Jody, that's all right. You can use this space to vent as well. Jody White Hartman's victory this week is that she didn't kill any of her kids. And that's okay. You don't have to feel weird about that. If you didn't kill your kids, I want you to send me your little victories. All right? I will read your names, and then the world will know that somehow you managed to do it for another week. Ryan Thompson wrote to me. Ryan writes this. "When I am around my son, I am on him constantly about all the little stuff the kids should do. Every once in a while, when I step back and watch him from a distance, I always think to myself what a great young man he has become. I think dads often overlook their victories because we don't step back often enough. Sage advice, Mr. Thompson." Thank you for sending that. By the way, I love your brother Richard's folk music. Thanks, Ryan. Also, in the pile of little victories that I got. Laura LaValle Morris. I don't know if you are related possibly to my podcasting partners, but I do want you to know that I think Laura LaValle is a made-up name. Writes this, huge parenting milestone for me today. I brought my 3-year-old daughter to preschool 1 year after she was diagnosed with cancer. Well, that is great, Laura. That's a crazy story. I think there's probably more to that story than what you encased here on my Facebook fan page. So I would love to know more about your story. Feel free to share that with me. And now, you know, I understand you want to use this little pseudonym you made up for yourself. That's okay. I'll know it's you. Send that in to me. I'd like to know more about your arc with that, as well as about your 3-year-old daughter. Send me information about that, and send me your little victory, any of those places I'm at, the daddy on board. You can come and report them to me in person if you want. Any time that I'm on the road, I'd love to meet loyal Dob Bobbers when I'm out and about wrestling all over the globe. This weekend in particular, I'm at the Pro South Arena in Piedmont, Alabama. Then on Sunday afternoon for a matinee event, I will be at the new Mid-Atlantic Sportatorium in Gibsonville, North Carolina. Next month, I'm coming to no less than these 3 cities. I'll be in Chicago, Illinois, Cleveland, Ohio, and Manhattan, New York, among some other stops I'll be making along the way. If you happen to be an aspiring pro wrestler looking to expand your horizons, on Sunday afternoon, October 21st, I'm presenting a webinar for other industry professionals entitled The Power of You. For more information about this and everywhere else that I'm going, drop by chikarapro.com. We make family-friendly pro wrestling that won't insult your intelligence and affirms the belief that wrestling should be fun. In addition to my podcast that you are listening to right now, I make other ones. One is called The Grizzly Bear Egg Cafe. I make that with Clayton Morris, and it comes out in the middle of every week. We get together and talk pop culture and complain. Then I typically get together with his wife, Natalie Morris, to talk about the top trending topics of the week in Google and on Twitter. That program is called The Trending Show. You'll find me there, except when I'm traveling and someone else fills in, like this weekend. And in about 7 days, give or take, I am likely to return to the program here, except it'll have a brand new title, likely to be Daddy on Board 107. Until then, adios, mis amigos.